You are listening to the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials on COVID-19. It's brought to you by the Ampers Network of Radio Stations. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm live from the KAXE studios on the cold, cold banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in today. We have Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joining us again today to answer questions that came in this week from listeners around the state. This conversation every week is your opportunity to ask questions about how Minnesota's responding and planning during this COVID-19 pandemic. You can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. This is a collaboration of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joins us now. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi. How are you?
I'm good. So most of our questions today, as you might guess, have to do with the vaccine. I was looking at numbers. So last week when we spoke, Minnesota had given about 320,347 first doses. I just looked today and we're at 497,843. But lots of people are still upset they can't get the vaccine they want, that the process should be easier. What's your take on where Minnesota's at right now and what we've accomplished and what you're doing going forward?
You know, I think like everything related to COVID-19, we have to be patient. And we are doing everything we can to get doses into the arms of Minnesotans. We are in a much better place right now. And Heidi, as you talked about the data, that certainly indicates it. But we're ready to scale up as soon as we get more supply, which is, you know, why we've moved to a process of working with, you know, our pilot sites, but also with local healthcare providers and clinics. Most folks are going to get their vaccine the same way that they get their healthcare delivered to them. And so, you know, as that more vaccine comes in, we have this all of the above strategy. We'll be able to scale up and get it into the arms of folks as soon as we get our allocation from the federal government.
Yeah, I think that's something that we all need to listen to, that there isn't enough yet, but it is coming.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's move into some questions from listeners. We heard from Mary Ann this week. She said, how is our state handling some of the technology challenges of scheduling and vaccinating the senior population when they are maybe not digitally savvy? I fear the pressure to roll out the vaccine quickly, to use digital tools to speed the process up, is going to leave some of our most vulnerable citizens in the dust. How is Minnesota confronting that?
So, Marianne, I really appreciate that question. You know, the thing that we have to keep in mind, as I, you know, mentioned earlier, is that most people are going to be vaccinated through their regular healthcare provider. So it's helpful to have an online account with them for, you know, for this and for all of your other medical needs, but it's not essential. You'll eventually be able to call your doctor's office to arrange a vaccine appointment. You know, healthcare providers like Allina and Health Partners, Essentia, all have phone lines you can call into to get information for COVID vaccines now and for all of your other medical needs. So, you know, I think the thing that is going to be most difficult will just simply be, as I mentioned before, the supply of vaccine. A good example is the Fairview Health System. So this week they had about 7,800 doses. And opened up appointments for folks on Tuesday. By 11 o'clock that morning, they had filled all of their slots, and they are only vaccinating people over 75 years old. So it's going to be frustrating for a while. And I think, you know, the same way that we have just seen the inequities and access impact a whole host of issues through this pandemic, you know, access to technology and to broadband is another challenge. But we're trying to do as much as we can by, you know, connecting folks with their individual healthcare providers. So when it becomes available to them, they can go get the shot the same way that they would get their flu vaccine or, you know, the way that their their care is delivered on a regular basis. And one of the reasons why we also have these sites in Minneapolis and Duluth, and, you know, we'll have community pharmacy locations as well, is because there are a whole host of folks across the state of Minnesota who don't have a regular health care provider, and we need them to have options as well. So just continue to be patient, and as more vaccine comes into the state, we're going to get it out.
We had another question this week. It had to do with wasted vaccines. The New York Times reported on some public health care workers that were in Oregon stuck in the snow in their cars, and they walked from car to car giving shots to drivers with vaccine doses because they were going to expire in 6 hours. So our listener says that's all very dramatic, but it makes me wonder how many other doses of the vaccine quietly expire due to the normal challenges of organizing and deploying the shots. Do you feel confident that here in Minnesota we have our act together enough that no vaccine doses are being wasted?
So I saw that story too, and I think you know, those healthcare workers who went car to car are heroes, and you know, really went above and beyond. And I think that that really just gets to the point that even one wasted dose is too many. We're doing really, really well here in Minnesota, and tracking every dose. We've had only 136 wasted doses. So out of more than 600,000 doses we've administered, that means that 99.98% of those doses are ending up in arms. I absolutely want us to hit 100%, but we're doing pretty good. You know, I heard a great story out of our St. Cloud pilot site. On one night, they finished vaccinating everyone with an appointment and had a total of 17 doses left. So they went back to the list to find people who live nearby who could make it in a moment's notice. And there were two seniors. There was an elderly couple who came in and said it was the first time that they had left their home for any reason since March 17th of 2020. Our folks, our healthcare providers, are hustling and trying to get these doses into arms as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And so far, I think Minnesotans can rest assured that we are not wasting doses here.
Big thank you, as always, to healthcare workers and the folks working at the Minnesota Department of Health. I don't think they've had a break.
No, they have not.
Yeah. We're talking with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan today. It's our statewide conversation on COVID-19. We heard from Tom from Reamer this week. He said, I'm in my early 60s, and I'm the primary caregiver for my homebound mother, who is in her 80s. How do I get a vaccine for my mom who can't leave her house? Also, would I qualify as a frontline worker in providing care for my mother? Thank you, Tom.
Well, thanks for being a caregiver for your mom, Tom. You know, I think about this a lot. And, you know, the best thing that you can do right now is to stay in touch with your mom's primary care physician. Most seniors in her situation will get their vaccines from their regular healthcare provider. And vaccine for people in your mom's situation is coming in every week now. But unfortunately, it is coming in at a trickle. We're working to get as much vaccine as we can to healthcare providers to take care of people over 65. Most clinics are prioritizing patients who are over 75 and in many cases reaching out to them to come in for their shot by phone. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about folks like your mom, Tom, because, you know, we need to create really intentional and creative partnerships to ensure that healthcare providers make every effort to make sure folks like your mom are vaccinated, people who are homebound. It's going to take some patience, but she's certainly in my thoughts. And, you know, as for caregivers, for you, Tom, our guidance has been that home health care workers must be paid caregivers to qualify for the vaccination. And with such a limited supply of vaccine, we all just have to continue to be patient. So please continue to stay in touch with your mom's health care provider and learn more about what the timing for her might be, and then continue to watch for more updates on future phases when you will also be eligible. So, and, you know, it's just, I'm feel like a broken record here, but again, the best thing that we can do is practice good hand hygiene, social distancing, and masking up, and limiting contact with folks who live outside your home.
Well, let's move on to another question that came in from a listener. They had heard Dr. Michael Osterholm on Meet the Press and in his podcast this week, and he said that the second dose of the vaccine should be delayed so more people 65 and older can get the first shot. He said a change would address the vaccine shortage and lessen the impacts of the new, more infectious coronavirus variants. And he said, we have a real possibility of seeing a major surge of cases this fall and into the winter, and I'm convinced that it will be much more severe than anything we've seen to date. What do you think about the variants and the change when we get the second dose of the vaccine? Will Minnesota consider this?
So it's a, you know, it's a fair point. You know, the more the virus spreads and the more people who can become infected, the more opportunities there are for the virus to mutate. You know, and again, that's why it's so essential to practice good public health protocols, both before and after receiving the vaccination. But it's very important to emphasize that the trials that have been done on these vaccines demonstrate effectiveness after the second doses have been administered, either at the 21 days for Pfizer or 28 days for Moderna. There hasn't been a lot of research on how effective these vaccines are if you wait longer. Our goal right now is to get Minnesotans vaccinated as quickly and as safely as we can. We said that from the beginning of the pandemic, that we're going to follow the science, and I think this pandemic's you know, is spreading much faster and further than it did because you know, our national leaders weren't following the science. So the official guidance from the CDC and the FDA is based on the best data available, and it hasn't changed on this topic. I will tell you that now that we feel we have a really solid partner in the Biden-Harris administration, you know, we anticipate, and I know that Dr. Osterholm is also part of the advisory group for President Biden. If they make a new recommendation, then, you know, we'll certainly look at it. But we are right now continuing to follow their guidance, and that hasn't changed.
You know, one of the things that I've heard Dr. Osterholm talk about is how the numbers have kind of, we don't remember till last spring. You know, I'm looking at today's numbers. There were 22 additional deaths yesterday, an increase of 1,054. Now, that's a much less number than the fall, but last spring, you know, at other times, I mean, this is still a big deal. I wonder if you could remind us of that.
You know, I think we are certainly not out of the woods. And, you know, we have seen consistently that, you know, our infection rate has been below 5%. And that's been a really good thing. And we want to make sure that we're able to continue to keep those rates low. But again, it all has to do with how closely we are following the guidelines. And we've been at this for almost a year now. And I know that it is difficult and it's a drag, but it is really, really critical. I think I'd just say, you know, Heidi, even this weekend, as an unofficial national holiday of Super Bowl Sunday is coming out, you know, just reminding people that, you know, having cocktail weenies and, you know, snack food with your friends probably isn't worth any of you getting ill. So just, you know, trying to continue to protect yourselves and protect the people that you care about.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another question that came in about the vaccine. This listener said, we've heard a lot about concerns of vaccine hesitancy, especially among BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. But for those who haven't had this kind of historical trauma in their life, they might not understand that. I wonder if you would address that. And also, are health officials seeing a lot of vaccine hesitancy among those folks here in Minnesota?
So this is, this is really hard. And Heidi, I'll just say, I've told you and your listeners over and over again, as soon as I'm able to get vaccinated, I will do it, and I will do it on camera, and I want people to be able to trust it. I have not yet had the opportunity, but still, want to let people know that I will jump at it as soon as I'm able. But, vaccine hesitancy exists in every community. So I think it's really important to understand what's causing people to worry about getting immunized and to, address those concerns. One group that has a very well-founded mistrust of the new vaccine is the African-American community. Their concerns are based on genuine historical trauma, such as the Tuskegee study and the Henrietta Lacks case. And we've, I think also in the Indigenous community, as we've seen some real trauma there as well, with regards to, forced sterilization and experimentation. So we need to absolutely acknowledge where people are coming from and folks who've, had even recent trauma with the healthcare system, that this can be something that's scary. So we've got a real responsibility to ensure that everyone has good information about the vaccine's benefits and the risks, and that everyone has the ability to get vaccinated. What's required is ensuring communities have access to reliable science-based information on the safety and the efficacy of vaccines, as well as, having these nuanced conversations about hesitancy and change the dialogue and really try to answer questions. Through our Department of Health, the Governor's Office, and the Governor's Community Resiliency and Recovery Work Group, we've been, leveraging a number of ways to have those conversations. We've been attending community-led virtual town halls, sharing materials and vaccine information in multiple languages on our website, and working with local public health, health systems, community-based organizations, and diverse media partners to get this information out. Some of the best ways, right, to get this information out is through word of mouth. And we know that, the credible messengers that folks need to hear from are from folks from their own communities. And so that absolutely matters too. Because we know that people become less hesitant about getting the vaccine if they know someone who's been vaccinated. So that's why it's so important to ensure that we're getting vaccines into communities that have been historically underserved. With the 1A priority group, we set aside thousands of doses for elders who are patients of the state's federally qualified health centers. And these are clinics that serve low-income communities across the state, including many patients who are from communities of color and from Indigenous communities. So caring for elders in these communities, we're also reassuring people that the vaccine is safe. And that's just been, purely anecdotally, what I've also been hearing is people who's, aunties or grandmas or moms, some of the matriarchs in families who've been getting the vaccine, that's been a real trigger for other folks in the family feeling like they can get it as well. We're going to continue to push. We need to get, between 70 and 80% of Minnesotans vaccinated. And that means making sure that communities of color also have access.
There's one good use for social media when people are posting when they get their vaccine. I mean, that people might be getting the vaccine, and that may help folks as well.
I love it. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things to see, especially, in my feed as I'm seeing Indigenous healthcare workers and folks who have really been on the front lines who've been getting it and just have a little peace of mind, but also know that they're not going to be bringing it home back to their families and communities too.
Well, we had another question come in that I know that we have talked about many times, but I think we should talk about it again. The Star Tribune reported this week that Minnesota suffered over 50,000 deaths in the year 2020. But a lot of people, a lot of social media posts say that there weren't any more deaths. The number isn't that high, that it's being inflated by the media. And these were probably people who would have died this year anyway. So would you address that again?
So I just got to say right off the bat that COVID is real and it's causing people to die. And it is deeply offensive to people like myself who have lost friends and family members to hear this kind of denial. And I certainly saw that movement on social media as well. And it is appalling. You know, Minnesota loses typically around 40,000 people a year from all causes of death. So the fact that we have over 50,000 deaths this year, which is about a 15% increase over 2020, is unacceptable. The cause of those additional deaths is COVID-19. You know, another point that's very concerning is when people say that only people with chronic health conditions die from this or only elderly people are vulnerable. Well, you know what? That's a lot of people in Minnesota. 24% or over a million people in Minnesota have high blood pressure. 330,000 people in Minnesota have been diagnosed with diabetes, and 1 in 10 people have diabetes, and they don't even know it yet. And Minnesota's obesity rate is at 30%. So we simply can't deny that the pandemic is serious, and to imply that the folks who have died of COVID were going to die anyway is hurtful and it's untrue and it is garbage thinking and not who we are as Minnesotans.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, let's move on to another question. I don't know if you're going to know the answer to this one, but we do have a listener who is very curious where the vaccines are manufactured. Is it in the United States? And does that mean there are more jobs being created by it?
So I had to ask, I had to phone a friend, certainly on this one, through our Department of Health. So Pfizer is the biggest hitter in this effort because they've been around longer and have been more involved in mass producing pharmaceuticals. So they've started manufacturing in locations in the Boston area, in St. Louis, Kalamazoo, Michigan, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, and Pers, Belgium. Moderna is doing a great job considering it has far less existing manufacturing capacity. They have brought a plant in Boston online as well, and it is also contracted with Lonza, another manufacturer that's producing a vaccine in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, along with a site in Switzerland. So Moderna has contracted with Catalent Incorporated in Bloomington, Indiana as well. So, you know, I think I think that's kind of a fun question to ask where it's coming from. You know, but the Associated Press just had a great article about the challenges of making the COVID-19 vaccine. The problem isn't having enough plants or workers. The production is limited by how difficult it is to manufacture bits of mRNA in large vats and concentrate them into fat cells in sufficient amounts enough to have an effective vaccine. If you don't do it right, it's basically like the same as just adding a bunch of water to soup to make more.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Another question about possible new vaccines. They want to know whether the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, when will we know whether that one works and is effective? They have heard that they can make way more doses of the vaccine once it gets approved. And will this dramatically impact how soon everyone can get their shots?
Sure. So I'm really excited about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because it is said to be effective. We're hearing that they're ready to go to the FDA for emergency use authorization in the next 2 weeks. The one downside is that they aren't meeting their production goals, so we won't get a flood of new vaccine that we were hoping for. But I think any new amount is going to be helpful.
And another question we got this week had to do with, I think we did not ask this last week, has to do with prisons, about how COVID is bad in prisons. And are they a high priority group for vaccinations? If they are, do you think that is right?
I do think that it's right. I think that those of us who have loved ones who are incarcerated care tremendously about their overall health and well-being, and in the state of Minnesota, we are responsible for the overall health and well-being of our community members who are incarcerated. So, you know, we'll be making decisions about the vaccine allocation coming up, but I think, you know, there's a real commitment that as we see our employees who are part of corrections, you know, being vaccinated, that there's an expectation that those who are incarcerated will be vaccinated at a similar time, you know, because there's simply a higher risk of contracting COVID because of being in a congregate setting. So this is something that I take very seriously, and you know, we see the humanity and dignity in all Minnesotans, and are going to approach this specific issue with that in that way.
Well, before we go, as a leader in Minnesota, I am curious if you have any advice for folks. We used to talk about this when we didn't realize how long the pandemic would go on, but anything new that you are finding to watch, to read, to listen to deal with living in a pandemic still?
Sure. So I will tell you that I have gotten on the Bridgerton train on Netflix. I'm also a big fan of The Bachelor, so please don't judge me. But we've also been just spending a tremendous amount of time outside and sort of getting over. I realized last night, you know, as I was going out to take a walk, I put on, you know, long underwear, leggings, sweatpants, and then my like snow pants over it, and then several layers. And I was like, this is just what we do now.
Yes.
Right. And so I think that's just part of it. Getting outside, this week will be extremely cold. So please use your best judgment, but also returning to those things that feed you. I've been spending a lot of time, reading, getting back to Louise Erdrich, many of her books that feel like old friends and feel like community in a book, even when we can't be together. So if there are things like that for you, I just encourage you to do it. And just also, I've been spending a lot of time on FaceTime with some of my, best friends. We can't, hang out necessarily in the same space anymore, but we can spend, a few hours on the weekend gabbing on the phone, or, you know, making brunch and eating together. That's been something that's been really positive, too. But we understand long winters. We can figure it out. But the light is at the end of the tunnel. We're going to have this cold blast this week, but I think it'll warm up a little bit more. And, you know, we're going to get through this.
Will you put on even more layers and get out in that cold blast?
I have to, because I have a dog. he will also be bundled up. We're going to make it work, but I think, we'll be smart about it too.
Right. Yeah. This is the time of the year where we realize fashion doesn't matter. And even if, you know, I have multiple layers of leggings on today that don't look great, but I'm warm, so that's good.
100% correct, right?
Yes.
Fashion goes out the window.
That's right. It's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. We appreciate you giving us your time again today. Stay safe, and thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Stay warm. Take care.
This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state through AMPR's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at kaxe.org. And if you want to ask a question next week, email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE KBXE. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.